The Homeland Security Department and the General Services Administration hand out its first of 7 awards under the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program. DHS will implement tools and services to improve its cybersecurity under the CDM program. In my biweekly feature, Inside the Reporter's Notebook, I write about this award and the next ones on tap. Producer Shefali Kapadia joins me now to discuss the DHS awards and other happenings in the federal IT community. Shefali, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me on, Jason. So in this notebook, you talk about this is number 1 of 7 under this contract vehicle. So who is this award going to, and what are some of the technologies under this?
So what's fascinating about this is DHS is, if you will, eating their own dog food, or as I like to say, I heard a better one recently, drinking their own champagne. I'm not sure if that still counts as a good analogy. But basically, DHS is saying, we're going to start with the first award, and we're going to implement certain sensors, certain technologies around continuous diagnostics and mitigation. And then we're going to see how that works, and then we'll improve upon it as we make other awards going forward. So this was awarded to Knowledge Consulting Group, which is one of the 17 holders under the CDM. This was a $6 billion deal awarded August 2013, if I have my dates correct. And this is really the first big award under it. Only $29 million, but because it's DHS, they're the first one out the gate. And what Knowledge Consulting Group's going to be doing is implementing a series of different technologies, including something from McAfee, something from Splunk, and then there's one other one as well, that the whole goal behind all of that is to get better sensors, better understanding of the health of their network, and then better how to fix their network when they do have cybersecurity troubles ahead, you know, earlier than currently.
And now, is there any indication about the next 6 awards, how much those might be, where those might go to, and if they're going to be doing any similar technology to this one, or what the differences might be there?
All the technologies, I think, are going to be the same, not necessarily the vendors, but in the CDM world, that's all under a certain set of tools like asset management, vulnerability assessment, things of that nature. The next set of awards will be much bigger in terms of money, because you're looking across something like 6 or 7 agencies. DHS and OMB worked together to split the agencies into groups. DHS was called Group A, Group B, and then Group C, Group D, Group E, Group F. So Group B is going to include some big agencies like the Veterans Affairs Department, the Transportation Department, the Energy Department, but also include OMB and the Office of Personnel Management. So that's why it's going to be such a big award. And in fact, an interesting little tidbit, or kind of an aside, DHS and GSA actually encouraged the prime vendors, the 17 of them, actually to team up, which is unusual under a BPA. Usually they're all competing, and what DHS is saying, these awards are going to be big and there's going to be a lot of it. So make sure that when you work together, you know, you guys, you may want to look forward and say, can we handle this volume of work? So that's fascinating. I heard from one vendor that the timeline is coming pretty soon. So Group B award, which is the next one up with Veterans Affairs Transportation, the bids are in, they're evaluating them, but there's a protest. So that's holding up Group B. Group C awards are due in late March, early April. Group D awards are going to come kind of May timeframe, and then ENF will be later on this summer. But they are rolling forward on this, and it's a big program, a lot of money to be spent.
That's interesting that there's a protest, because since you talked about this whole idea of collaboration between the vendors, you'd think maybe they'd be working together instead of fighting against each other. But I guess there's always a little bit of protest when it comes down to these contracts.
Yeah, they're frenemies, without a doubt, when it comes to a lot of the vendors. The challenge here with the protest is someone who read the task order, and let me just, I'm going to go on a soapbox for 30 seconds, so bear with me, Shefalia. The problem with this is you can't see the task orders. You don't know what they're calling for. You don't know what they're asking for, because they're behind this firewall. And while 90% of procurements are out there on FedBizOps that you can see everything, when it comes to task orders under BPAs or schedules, GSA schedules specifically, you can't see what's behind them. So we don't know why there is a protest, and we don't know who's protesting. We just know that there is what they call an agency-level protest. That means DHS or GSA is looking at the protest, and their acquisition official will eventually decide. All right, off the soapbox now for a second. Let me go back to the fact is that there must be some concerns around why the task order was written the way it was and how it's being presented, that there's one vendor who's saying, we don't believe this is fair, or we have a problem with the evaluation criteria or something like that. Again, we're not sure. And the vendors I talked to, and even the officials I've talked to within Some of the agencies don't know why they're protested or who's protesting. So, but I got a copy of the notice at least, so I know it's true.
And so another, you know, these contracts coming out, are any of them going to be completely government-wide, or are each of them specifically targeted to a certain group of agencies?
So the BPA initially was government-wide, right? That's the beginning point. Now each task order is targeted at those agencies. And the reason why they're doing that, OMB and DHS looked at the what they call the architectures, the network architectures, the security architectures, and tried to group similar to similar agencies. So for whatever reason, let's talk about Group B for a second. VA, Transportation, Energy, OPM, OMB, some others have similar network architectures, or they have the greatest need. So that's how they're doing the BPAs. And it's interesting, the other bit about this is that vendors go into what they call reading rooms to read about these agencies' architectures to have a better understanding of what's happening. And when they go into these reading rooms, they're not allowed to bring anything but a pen and paper or a pencil and paper, no electronics, no nothing, because they're worried about, because it is very sensitive information.
And we had a lot of talk about when there was this whole potential DHS shutdown last week, and now again, possibly this week, that a lot of the programs under DHS related to cybersecurity, along with a host of other issues, but those would also be affected. So if there is a lapse in appropriations for any amount of time for DHS, how would this affect this whole contract?
It's interesting. DHS has said many times, as you mentioned, cyber would be affected. And what would happen if the appropriations lapse, even on a partial shutdown, is cyber programs like continuous diagnostics and mitigation, like the Einstein program, would slow down. There's a lot planned this year, so those, obviously, everything would be pushed to the right until the funding was taken care of. Obviously, if it's just one day, if Congress gets their act together and passes something from Friday and it shuts down on Saturday but reopens on Sunday, that's not a big deal. But if there's any real length, you know, a few days, a week, a couple weeks, that would be a major setback for these cyber programs. And that's part of the argument that DHS is trying to make to Congress. Hey, Congress, you finally realize the importance of cybersecurity. We got to get this out there. We got to get this implemented. So I think that's part of how they're making their case.
I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about your next item in your notebook, which is about a General Services Administration telecom conference. And one of the things you say about this is it's a not-for-attribution conference.
So the conference was not the contract. So what I'm reporting here on this is fascinating. Is the fact is that GSA gave this presentation at this conference, which we're not going to mention because they won't let us reporters do our job there, so we're not going to give them any free publicity. But basically, it's a conference that has been going on for years, telecom-focused, great speakers. GSA goes up there and gives their presentation about their NS 2020, their Network Services 2020 contract. But the contract, the event is supposed to be not for attribution. Like, you can't quote the people on the stage. There's 500 people in the conference. I always ask the question when I see the person who runs this conference, you know, Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn exist. You know, they're smartphones. And he just kind of laughs and walks away from me because he doesn't want to hear me complain that I have been complaining to him for the last 15 years about this conference. But the point is that the reason why I wrote the notebook item, not to lambast this conference, but to show that, you know, this is news, it's interesting, you got great speakers. And what the speakers said, they're not going to say that. What didn't matter if it's not for attribution or full attribution, they're going to say the same thing. And I think as a community, the federal community, we need to come around and say, listen, conferences need to be on the record because of all these other reasons and because it helps the government. Now, get to your point about the contract itself. This is the NS 2020 contract. The draft request for proposal was actually released on Saturday for what they call EIS, Enterprise Integration Services. And this is the big piece of the NS 2020 umbrella. So we have a link to it on federalnewsradio.com so people can read the draft RFP. But basically what it comes down to is GSA is moving out on their next generation telecom contract. They extended their current telecom contract called Networks. That's Networks with an S, with an X if you're keeping track, through 2020 to get this current contract in place. So a lot is happening regarding this specific contract. And again, we have some dates to report on as well. The comments on the draft RFP are due by March 31st. And then there'll be an industry day sometime in May, and a final RFP should be out sometime in July. So it's a 15-year contract. A lot of vendors are excited. And GSA is hopeful to get more vendors than the typical telecom to bid on it as well.
And what are some of the specific areas within telecom that will be covered under this networks contract, or will it be a little bit of everything?
It's going to be a little bit of everything, but they're actually trying to simplify it a little bit by saying instead of a bunch of broad categories, they're going to look four mandatory categories and then something to effect of 15 what they call non-mandatory categories. And the point of having only four is to get that other competition, because what they were worried about is you get, you know, the Verizons, the AT&Ts, the CenturyLinks, all those are the ones who bid, yet there's other companies like Hughes is a good example of a company that does telecom services. They do satellite, but it's still considered telecom. So they want to get companies like that to bid. And I think that's key here is the fact is they're trying to simplify it, and they're also trying to they'll keep it broad enough that can meet agencies' needs, but the four mandatory is key.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about is somebody from the Office of Management and Budget is leaving after about 34 years in government. Tell us about that.
This is one of those people. Kathy Stack is leaving. She has retired actually as of February 20th, and she's one of those people that you probably never talked to, you probably never heard from, you probably never saw her in a memo, but she made such an important contribution to the federal community, obviously over 34 years, but more specifically over the last 4 or 5 years when she really focused on evidence-based decision-making within government. And I think that's why it was important to mention her in the notebook this week, because of her just impact on the idea of using, for agencies to use evidence-based data to make better decisions. You know, this, the Obama administration gets a lot of credit for moving in that direction. Obviously, this started back under the Bush administration with something called the PART program and the scorecard. But the point is that having someone like Kathy, who was well-respected, worked on the budget side, moved to the management side, I think it's good to recognize people like that. And there's probably dozens and dozens and dozens of others, people out there who deserve the recognition, but we just don't know about it. So I'd encourage people to let us know when good people retire.
And is there any word yet on who will be her replacement in that position?
You know, it's one of those things that's tough because OMB is so kind of insular sometimes. You don't know who moves in, who moves out. I know they actually set up an evidence-based unit to go with, you know, in their management side, to go with the, you know, financial management, e-government acquisition performance. So we'll have to, that's something to keep an eye out for. All right. 7:21. We are going to continue our conversation and move on to some other things. Shefali, thank you so much for taking the time and questioning me. This was good.
Thank you, Jason.